Hi, everybody. Good morning. I would like to welcome you to our spaces this morning. It is, I guess, morning where I am here in the UK. And hopefully everybody's had a good day so far if you've been up for a while. This is Robbie Young. I am the CEO of Animoca Brands, responsible for investments. And I would like to welcome you all today to our spaces in honor of International Women's Day. And we're going to be talking about the impact of blockchain technology in 2024. And so for that, we have a great group of speakers assembled for you today. From across the Mochaverse, so to speak. And so what I wanted to do was welcome you, of course, to our monthly space. I'd like to wish you a happy International Women's Day. But also in terms of this great panel of speakers, hopefully they'll shed a lot of light on and insights on what they've been building in the space. But first things first, as some of you may know, we're running a special campaign in honor of International Women's Day. And for added points, you will be needing a code. So pay attention and write it down. The code is Women in Web3. Women in Web3. And that's three as in number three. So now, without further ado, maybe we'll have a round of introductions because I see we have most of our speakers here up on stage. And so, I'd like to maybe ask everybody to introduce themselves. I don't know if you're all in the same order on your screens, but on mine, maybe we can start with Božena.
Hello, hello everybody. It's absolute pleasure to be here with you today. My name is Božena. I lead and co-founded a company called GameMe. We're in mobile gaming space for 10 years, and last 4 years we have been building with Web3. We have a large global player base of 75 million players. We're part of Animoca Brands, and the company is based out of Prague, Czechia. However, I'm currently dialing in from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. So it's my absolute pleasure to join the women topic in business and in blockchain technology from this country, and there is more and more opportunities for women. Happy to be here.
Great. Thanks, Božena. Happy to have you here. And then maybe we'll move to Amanda. Amanda, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, my name is Amanda. I am right now in Portugal, and I will be in London. I'm the co-founder of a company called Learning Frequency. Learning Frequency helps students understand themselves as learners by helping them create, fill out a questionnaire based on their engagement preferences and their learning preferences that visualizes their answers into an avatar that's then minted as an NFT and as an asset that they then own. Which are called frequency bots. You could see the little frequency bots on my profile. And then that becomes an interoperable learning profile that can be plugged into any learning environment. And I am a part of the Animoca universe through I'm in the OC Open Campus cohort 4, which I just joined and I'm so excited about. And my vision for the future is to be able to have students understand how they learn, wherever they learn, whether that's in a game, whether that's in a classroom, and having them own that information and own their own learning journey.
Fantastic. Thank you, Amanda. And next, maybe I'll pass it to Adelina. Good morning.
GM, GM, everyone. I hope everyone's doing good. It's morning for me as well, as I'm in Portugal too. So I'm Adelina. I'm the head of comms for World of Women. For those who don't know, we started as an art collection. So my profile pic is a World of Women. And we became a global movement for inclusion in the next gen of tech. So now you can think about, wow, World of Women, more like a modern lifestyle club for trailblazing women. So people buy WoWs to not only own the iconic art, but also to become member of this inspiring global community with like digital and in real life connections. And very happy to be here.
Fantastic. Thank you. Welcome, Adelina. And last, but of course not least, I see a Mocha 7388 there, and I think that would be Catherine. So, Catherine, would you like to introduce yourself?
Definitely. Hello, Robbie. Hello, everyone. I'm also based in the UK. My name is Catherine. I'm a senior tokenomics analyst at Amoca Brands. I've been part of the tokenomics team now for over two years. I work on all different aspects of tokenomics design, but my main focus of interest is data analysis, modeling, and simulating. Probably the most notable token launch that I've worked on so far is the Open Campus and the EDU token last year. My previous background was as a data scientist at a cryptocurrency exchange, and before that, my life was spent in academic research in astrophysics and cryogenics. Pleasure to meet you all.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. Happy to have you here. So I think maybe the best way to start, and we'll, you know, obviously try to keep the flow of conversation, spur of the moment. I think the best way to start maybe is to talk about how your unique backgrounds, from tokenomics and physics to community engagement, entrepreneurship, et cetera, how did this contribute to your approach and understanding of blockchain? Because obviously, we're all relatively new to the space in terms of our careers. And how did, what you had done before helped you really in how you embraced this new Web3 world? Does anybody want to go first or shall I pick? Okay. I'm going to pick then. Amanda, why don't I pick on you? Especially because, obviously you're focused on education. So in terms of your background, what was it you think that, helped inspire you or prepare you for your Web3 journey?
Absolutely. I did go off mute, so it's okay. I kind of picked myself too, Robbie. I have a master's in curriculum instruction, and then I wrote my thesis on these seven levels of engagement, using the community as the classroom on the impact on engagement, achievement, and then I used that framework in marketing, actually. I used it in opening restaurants all over the country because I had no other experience other than this foundation of understanding what made students connect, and so I figured it would be a good way to also think about what made humans connect. And I then started a company, CEO of a company called Zappos. His name was Tony Hsieh, and he was very passionate. Organization was all of rather than a hierarchy, having it be more like ants or bees, where you don't really know who's in charge, but they all have a role. And this was in 2012. So I was very passionate and with organizations and all of these kind of different initiatives to turn a company into more of a decentralized. I feel three for quite some time because this was a new model that allowed for people to have ownership of their own experience within a workplace, to have a different types of ways of being able to share their voice, and so this was something that when Web3 came about, a friend of mine, her name is Maggie Hsu, she actually was Tony's chief of staff, and so she started talking about Web3 through the lens of self-organization, and that's what really drove me to tie all of the loose ends together to recognize that this can be an opportunity to give students ownership of their own voice, give students ownership of their own identity almost in a self-organized fashion.
Fantastic. Thank you for that, Amanda. So still on the topic of backgrounds preparing you for your journey, maybe Bojena, we've known each other for a while and you spent many years in the game industry. For you, how was this transition or transformation in starting to embrace the world of Web3 as it relates to your gaming experience?
Okay. So what brought me to gaming was actually being unable to decide whether I like art or math more at school. And I loved them both equally. So I went to study interactive media art and economy. And with that, I didn't go directly into gaming, but later I understood this is actually in gaming these two meet. But I joined Google and I worked there for a couple of years on launching YouTube partnerships and local channels in across European markets, so bringing YouTube into Europe, and most of the channels that were popping up and were super, super popular were around gaming. And I was really inspired how the content itself was able to bring people together around a certain topic. Communities around content, right? And people being able to connect. So being also a gamer, I was really inspired to see it. Like if we take the same principle of connecting people around topics and that would be in play, what would happen? And this is how we founded Gamey 10 years ago. So I left Google and we founded Gamey with this idea of connecting people in play. And it has been the same vision 10 years ago, and we're still building towards the same vision now. We're just using different tools to make that happen. And what we have learned over the past years was that there are certain elements that function as maybe as a glue to build a community as large as we have across casual style games. And some of them are different gamification elements. Some other are social graph, right? You're connected to people you know and just make your gaming experience better. But over time, we realized that there is something even more powerful. And that's just the aspiration to how do you become a part of a community and an ownership of an asset, which is like a proof. Like I have this thing from this game now. I belong to the community. I contribute. It makes people behave a little bit differently, a bit more empowered. They feel to be part of something bigger. And this is how the blockchain came into play into gaming. And we just understood this is something that we wanted to build all the time, all the way. Anyways, we're now having a technology just makes it more possible and stronger.
Fantastic. Thanks, Bojina. Now maybe, Catherine, I'll move to you next. I know you have a background in lots of hard science and things that I'm glad we have you on board for, because I don't understand myself. It would be great to learn how perhaps this has helped you specifically, I guess, because you focus a lot on tokenomics and kind of the root mechanics of how Web3 works.
Yes. So a bit of background about me. I am very dyslexic. So my focus always from a young age has always been maths and science. Always been interested in new technology. Still remember getting my first dial-up connection and unlocking the whole world of the internet to me, and that being like a fantastic revolution. So I went on, I studied a master's in physics and astrophysics. From that, I learned a lot of different skills. So data analysis, statistical modeling, numerical simulation, as well as being able to like conceptualize theories and being able to interpret complex problems and being able to communicate them simply. So I feel like with physics, we basically rely on hypotheses and frameworks to make predictions. We then do experiments and observe them. And we can use this to either validate or indeed see that we need to modify and iterate our original assumptions. These are like principles that I apply all the time when designing ecosystems, like particularly looking for where we can find points of failure and inefficiency, and allow me to mitigate these token design risks. Just also as an aside, as part of my master's thesis, I was also looking at how to use quantum mechanical finance, how to use quantum mechanical methods in finance to look at wealth distribution, and how to create a more equitable, fair way to reward people based on their contributions. So I feel like this has been a journey that's been going on for quite a long time.
Fantastic. Thank you, Catherine. Appreciate that. And maybe, Adelina, I'll come to you next. If you can give us a little bit of a flavor of how you feel like your background prepared you for your Web3 journey specifically.
For sure. I'm very impressed with everyone's backgrounds here. Personally, I studied literature, but I was very interested into gaming, so I started working into gaming. A fun fact is that almost like 10 years ago, I did like a very short time at the Sandbox when it was a game, but just like not Web3 at all, not on the blockchain, anything. And anyways, I think what helped me a lot is that I was in a tech company before doing like cloud computers for gamers. And I think that made it feel less intimidating to discover about Web3. I also really dove into the space right away, because one of the co-founders of WOW invited me to join the company, and I didn't know anything about blockchain, Web3, NFTs. Like, I was completely lost, and I was like, are you sure? And then he just pitched me the community, basically. And that actually was my anchor, because with the community, we created like a hub, an educational hub. And it was basically just, it was like, almost 3 years ago now, just me being like, hey, I don't know anything, and finding content is not that easy. Can we have like a little hub where we have like all the content about what is all of this jargon and all of these concepts that I don't understand? And yeah, we just like took it from there and just answered all the questions, and the community helps me build those articles. And that was very, very helpful. So yeah, I think the fact that already having like a bit more of a tech background made it feel less scary, because when I talk to other people in my surroundings, like I don't know, some artists, friends, they're like, oh, it sounds so complicated, so you really have to like simplify everything. But I can understand, because it's a whole new world, and yeah, I think like feeling like I can potentially have one foot in already made it feel more easy and exciting.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Adelina. Appreciate that. I think maybe for the next question, I'd like to kind of maybe pick on somebody to talk about a specific project or initiative that you're involved with that you feel like really, exemplifies innovation in the blockchain space, how it addresses challenges or opportunities, etc. And I was thinking, Catherine, you mentioned earlier that that you worked a lot on Open Campus. So maybe you could talk to us a little bit about your views on, you know, how this, you know, provides innovation in the space specifically, and what you thought in building it, some of the challenges and opportunities were.
Definitely. Thank you. Just so everyone has as a basis, the Open Campus is a digital platform which utilizes blockchain technology to democratize education. We launched it in 2022, and the ultimate aim is to provide unrestricted access to educational content globally and enable educators to share and monetize in their work fairly. So kind of the main challenges and opportunities that we faced was the accessibility. So we want to provide quality educational content. Normally in educational settings, teachers don't necessarily get to choose what curriculum they're choosing. So we're trying to break that down to empower students to be able to access a more diverse range of educational content. The other big problem was the fair compensation of teachers and educators, and making sure that their work is fairly compensated. The other one was we wanted to have a decentralized governance over our organizations and allow people to have their say and to communicate through that, and which we set up the Open Campus DAO. And the other big problem in education is verifiable credentials. So how do we record our educational history, and how do we share that, and how do we prove our learning journey? And we introduced something called the Open Campus ID. So kind of the things that we did to innovate on this in order to solve these problems was we started with the publisher NFT model, and this was a proof of concept that we did in 2021 with TinyTap. So this is where existing educational content courses were turned into NFTs. These NFTs represented a certain amount of the revenue that the courses generated. These NFTs were sold on the open on OpenSea, with the teachers receiving 50% of the profits, the other 50% going to the TinyCap company for setting up the courses. The person that purchased these publisher NFTs therefore had the right to access some of the revenue from these courses, but in exchange for doing that, they need to promote the courses. So whether this was re-uploading the courses on TinyTap, or whether this was them doing it themselves and self-promoting the courses to other people. So that was one of our innovations. As I also mentioned, we have the OCID system, which is a soulbound token. This is your .edu domain if people have already signed up for it. And this is a digital identity that enhances engagement by facilitating access to resources and your participation within the Open Campus system. You're also able to learn points based on your engagement within the system and based on the quality of the either the content you produce if you're a teacher or your learning score if you're a learner. There's a lot more to go on, but I feel like unless anyone wants me to, I'll stop there and let someone else speak.
I guess we'll have to read the white paper for ourselves. Thank you, Catherine. Appreciate it.
We'll have a whole separate Open Campus session, maybe.
Exactly. So maybe, Amanda, I'll come to you next, just because I know you've also been working together in the Open Campus ecosystem. So maybe you can give us some ideas about, you know, the innovation that you see and what working with Open Campus, I guess, means to you and your business.
Yes, absolutely. I think that most people don't immediately think Web3 when it comes to education. And I think when they do, they think of it in you know, only in these digital worlds, not necessarily within the classroom. And so the work that I have been doing with Clara Brown Entrepreneurial Academy in Denver has been absolutely incredible because, you know, this product came out of a longitudinal study with these kids on what it looked like when we taught kids about their own engagement. And this is just such a profound experience that kids get access to this information because most of the time parents get this access or teachers get this access, but kids never get to actually see what works for them and doesn't work for them as a learner. And so, you know, when you go into a classroom and you say, how do you learn? Most kids will say, oh, I like videos or I love video games or, you know, again, they'll kind of shrug. And so we give them this opportunity for them to not only understand what works and doesn't work for them, to start to actually ask questions to themselves on this feels right or this doesn't feel right, but then visualizing it in a way that is accessible to kids. And I think that is and being able to, again, have it be dynamic, have it be malleable. I always say that kids are actually more like an NFT. They're not just this, you know, static, stagnant image that just stays as one thing always. You know, they're constantly ever evolving. They're constantly changing. And so being able to have this be represented as an NFT and then with the potential to even plug that into the OC ecosystem, you know, as kind of a profile of a learner is really exciting. But the next phase of the work we're doing, which is really not actually even remotely public yet, but I suppose it is now, is we're doing research in order to be able to really understand when quality of engagement is happening within games. And so this is not necessarily learning games. This is saying that kids can learn in any game, but we don't necessarily know when that is happening. And so the research we're doing is with an organization called Public Foundation. They're the UN Media Lab, Learning Economy Foundation. I highly recommend looking at what they're doing. They've done a lot of Web3 efforts with Lego. They did. They've done Web3 efforts with Boy Scouts, Metaversity, and just think about being able to plug into any game environment, have a nuanced understanding of if you are learning in that environment, if you have a quality of gameplay, a meaningful experience, visualizing that data into a dashboard, into verifiable credentials, and being able to have a portfolio of yourself as a learner so that when you go back into school, and maybe you didn't learn that great the day before, you can say, no, but look, I did learn. I learned in this video game. And it wasn't a video game where I had to, you know, be spelling the words correctly. It was a video game that I absolutely loved. And it just so happened that I also learned. And so again, the intention is to create lifelong learning wherever you learn, however you learn, and give access to the student so that the student can start to be able to, again, take that ownership, true ownership of their learning journey within any environment and again, develop a love for learning. So with the OC experience and the OC ecosystem, there's just so many endless opportunities, not only from the learner side, but also just from plugging into different, you know, into different gaming environments and working in unique ways for students to take ownership and of their identity.
That's great. Thank you, Amanda. I appreciate that. I think that's really insightful, particularly, you know, in how students are connecting with learning in these new ways. Maybe to move on to a slightly different topic, but related, you know, Virginia, I know you and I worked together for some time, and you spent a long time in the game space, particularly coming from your Web 2 mobile gaming background, and thinking about bringing huge numbers of users into products, and you've done that quite successfully in the past. With regard to blockchain adoption, what do you think, how do you feel, what are the primary barriers, you think, to blockchain adoption and understanding, amongst the general public? Because obviously, as you think about user acquisition for your products, blockchain adoption is definitely one of the key issues.
Right. This is such a big and widely discussed topic, and I don't think we have fully nailed it. But there are some thoughts that, or learnings that, we came across that I would be happy to share, as we all understand that this is not really blockchain that people use, right? They go for and fall in love with products, and we all here, as we're Web3 enthusiasts, we have built products, Web3 products, that appeal to enthusiasts like ourselves, and the story there is easy to tell because people are already excited about Web3, and then they use the products, they understand the value, and we're kind of in a self-reinforcing bubble. And to go outside of this bubble, it's a very demanding task. And there has been many things. There have been many things discussed, like it has to be very seamless, maybe no gas fee, maybe email sign up. But I don't really think that's very helpful, to be honest. I think that's kind of a baseline. But what we have really seen, that's not the magic trick. Even if you take away the gas fees and make the sign up really easy, it is about the story, how we tell it and when we tell it. Because in the case of ownership, and we're all excited about digital property rights and ownership, it's a very abstract concept. And if you take this abstract concept and you introduce it to somebody who has not maybe identified there is a problem in Web2 games, that there is no ownership. When the problem is not named or identified, the solution does not appear to be rightly placed. So we have seen many times that we have made really easy, seamless onboarding, like technologically seamless, right? No gas fees, easy sign up, wallet opens, people earn first token. But since these are not Web3 ready people yet, they would look at it and they would be like, "And?" So we have worked through the storytelling and when is the right moment and how do we tell the story that's quite complex so people appreciate there is a difference of owning and not owning the digital asset. And what we came to conclusion with our most recent launch of Arcade app is that there is a moment where people care about the game. And you can look into the data, you can look into how they come back and play and the retention curve. But it's not the first day. It's when people care enough about the game and there is a certain progress and there is a certain time and effort investment, perhaps even financial investment in the game, when it means something to them and there is a character that is attached to their progress. This is the moment when we have a chance to tell the story. Now you care about the character, you can own it, and what does that mean? There are, I'm absolutely sure, there are more moments like that across different games and experiences. I think the important learning here is it's not about making it technologically easy. That's not enough. There has to be a good way how to tell a story. And unless the gamer and the player identifies, there is a problem that they do not own the assets in Web2 games, which majority of them have not identified yet. It's very easy to offer it and make them excited on the day one. Very, very easy. Very hard, actually. It's easy to try, but hard to achieve.
I couldn't agree with you more. Staying on this same topic, I guess, about blockchain adoption, but coming at it from a slightly different angle, as you mentioned, it's very difficult for gamers who've been used to consuming a product in a particular way in Web2 and explaining to them that the Web3 sort of evolution of that is actually fundamentally different. Adeluna, maybe I'll come to you because I think, with regard to your work at World of Women, much of what you're creating in this community could be considered, completely new in concept thanks to Web3. What have you found with regards to the barriers, to blockchain adoption?
I just wanted to say that, like, in terms of gaming, like, I would have loved to own really, like, my assets and maybe trade them in previous game where I spent way too many days and months of my life. So, yeah, I really believe that the gamers, like, I think it's the best ones to adopt first. And also, once you convince gamers, you're good to go for the rest of the world. Usually they're the hardest ones. But I do agree on the fact that having something seamless is important, but that won't be everything. That won't make it all. So I have two visions. The wow one would be that, like, education is really, really much needed. So appreciate what you're doing, Amanda. I think we need more of that, because like, the first barrier is kind of understanding what we're talking about. But personally, I think that, like, if we want, like, a bigger mass adoption, we need to have more real life applications, and the blockchain technology should be almost invisible. It should be, like, part of your everyday life. Like, you don't necessarily understand how network works, but you use your phone every day. Kind of like the same idea. I'm very excited about blockchain technology personally for other stuff as well, such as, like, where does the things that I'm eating come from, or, like, where was this produced, where did my tables wood made of, like, a lot of things. And there's, like, so much potential that I think there's something that maybe we don't know which will make the masses click more than others. I see that maybe you want to add something on it.
So maybe, Adelina, I'll ask you to elaborate on that a little bit. And you know, whether it's with regards to your own community at World of Women or just elsewhere in the Web3 community, you know, what in your opinion are some of the most exciting innovations that you've come across in Web3 so far? I guess what are some that are in the works that you're excited about upcoming? Pick either one.
So in the works, we've had a few different things. We had ArtFest, which was an art festival celebration, but I'm going to talk to you about something else, which is what we're currently working on. So it's Patio. Patio is our community hub. So people can go claim their profile. So if you have a WoW or a WoW G, a WoW Galaxies from our second collection, and WoW is World of Women for our first collection, just for those who don't know. So you can claim your profile, you can customize it, you can put all your information in it. And then we have some fun stuff, like there's a quest of origins, which tells you which planet you're from, because each of the characters, they come from different worlds. Like, for example, my WoW comes from Rainbow Oral, because I'm a rainbow and she looks amazing. You can customize your profile picture. We have different outfits on the salon. You can showcase your collection, but more importantly, you can connect with others who are in the community. You can put in your interests. There is a map. You can, like, scroll around the planet and see who's nearby. You can organize meetups, so that will help you also find people to organize meetups. We're sponsoring meetups also, because we really believe in the importance of, like, of course, digitally connecting, but also strengthening that bond in real life. This is why also we're, like, our flagship event is, like, the gala, which is a huge event that we just had in end of February. And we actually just did a trial with NFC chips during the gala. So we did bracelets, and there was, like, a little green gem in the middle, and there was an NFC chip in it. And then you would just, like, really simply set it up by tapping it with your phone. And then during the entire night, you could just, like, show your bracelet to people. They would tap it. They would access your Patio profile. So there they would see, like, all the socials that you put, like, either your Twitter, your Instagram, whatever. and they would be able to also just connect with you and keep your information. And what's really cool is that we just released guest profiles. So it means that one does not need to have a World of Women or World of Women Galaxy to be able to claim a profile, which is great because we want to onboard more people there, and we want to make really a hub that is welcoming. Of course, those people won't have access to all the same perks. Some stuff is token gated, but they will be able to have a look of what it looks like and get an idea.
So fantastic.
We are excited about the patio.
That sounds great. That sounds really cool. And I like the idea of the guest profiles, because I think, you know, finding great ways to expand the community while still recognizing that, you know, your core supporters and community members are the most important, I think is really great. I'll come to you next, Catherine. You look at a lot of projects. I know you work on a lot of different projects as well. For you, from your role in really architecting these products from token design on up, what are some of the most exciting innovations you've come across in your career so far in Web3?
Okay, so I was thinking about this, and you can go way back, like even before blockchain, the innovation here. But I think smart contracts were the big thing here, allowing us to build things on top of blockchain technology. But to be a bit more recent, I think the advantages and what we're having in like layer zeros and bridging and things like that, and the advancements that happen in there have been incredible. I remember like a few years ago waiting hours for things to be transferred that are now being done in like minutes. So for me, that's fascinating. I think we've obviously seen the rise in like layer two and scalability solutions. I know we've got the Ethereum upgrade coming up soon that's going to make gas fees on layer twos a lot cheaper, but we're also seeing the same thing on Bitcoin with the Lightning Network and with stacks and things like that. So we're seeing real applications being built on top of things, and I think that's really exciting. The other thing that as a department, I think everyone is super excited about is all the new different token standards. So we saw the ERC 404 that came out, and we've now got the ERC 741 that's come out, which is basically bringing aspects of fungible tokens and non-fungible tokens together. We're also seeing like this kind of innovation happen on different chains such as Solana. Solana has a token 2022 program, which allows developers to play around with different ideas for how tokens interact without causing any major disruptions and security concerns on their network. So for me, those are the big ones. I also think when this technology does actually integrate with more traditional financial services, I think that's going to open up a whole new world of DeFi applications as well.
Wow, fantastic. That's a lot of ground you covered there. But I completely agree with you. And I mean, definitely on the smart contract side, that's why we're all here. I think, you know, moving on to thinking about, again, this topic of, education. We've talked about education on the one hand, about what we're doing with Open Campus, that Amanda and Catherine have been working on, as well as educating audiences. And I guess, because what we're talking about here is infrastructure, Amanda, I'll come back to you. How important do you think it is for your audiences to be really aware of what the blockchain is and to have that blockchain literacy? Or do you think that that's not actually fundamental to them being able to interact with the product?
Yes, I go back and forth with this a lot. I think that it is not actually necessary to understand blockchain to interact with products, but I think that it is helpful to understand the blockchain. So that's kind of a bit of a circular answer, but I'll explain what I mean. I think that when the internet Web 2 was forming, we didn't really have the internet to talk about the internet. And so we just adopted it as is because that's what was given to us. But just by nature with Web 3, we have this opportunity kind of again, as it is decentralized, to have ownership of our own voice and our own perspectives and our own opinions. The problem is that it's kind of being built as we're talking about it. And so there's a lot of technological terms that I think are quite difficult for the public to wrap their heads around. And I think the biggest two problems that we face when it comes to Web3 adoption, Web3 understanding, is that there's just a lot of confusion because of these types of terms and because of these types of jargon, which has made it kind of quite a tight-knit community, but it doesn't allow for accessibility. So that's the first. And then the second is that there's people want to engage, but they're quite distracted by, what is a MetaMask wallet? How do I get it? And what if I don't remember my passcode? And then what if I, get, and a lot of it again is I'm going to get hacked and I'm not going to know what to do. And so it's quite overwhelming just to get someone to even understand how to utilize these tools. But there's also tools that are being, I work with a company called Bastion, and they really make the Web3 layer quite invisible. You log in through a Gmail address, a username, and then you can mint an NFT within platform without any crypto, without any wallet. And so it is kind of this invisible layer that's not making Web3 the focal point. It's making it, I once had a designer work for me, and she said that, you don't actually even sometimes remember that you're breathing until there's pollution. You actually want it to feel quite invisible, right? But on the other side, there's so much to be learned in terms of, and the new jobs that are very much going to be. I don't know if anyone saw the interview about that kids don't have to code anymore because now everyone's a coder because it's more, about directive knowledge and we're all a programmer. And I do not believe that. But what I do believe is that it's a knowledge economy that's coming up. And the more that we know, the more that we understand about how things work, the more we can work with technology. And that is who we're going to be working with. We're not just going to be working with humans. We are going to be working with AIs. And blockchain will be imperative and crucial for this new internet. Again, one ingredient is blockchain. One ingredient is AI. We're seeing the ingredients. We haven't seen the full recipe. We're seeing the ingredients of this next web. And the more we know about it, the more we can work with it, the more we can, again, have the knowledge that we need to continue to create within it. And so does the, user that's just going to be interacting on a, in a light way of being able to interact within a game or plug into, log into a social network and need to know everything about the inner workings? No. But if you want to create, if you want to design, if you want to build, I think that it is meaningful to have that education.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there, Amanda. And maybe, Bojin, I'll come to you for some, I guess, to get your perspective, because I think, as Amanda was saying, there's a lot of ways you can use account abstraction and social sign-ins and stuff to kind of push the blockchain infrastructure to the background. But fundamentally, you still need to face that potential educational challenge if you're trying to convince people that they actually own stuff and how that's different. How do you see that, Bojina, in your sort of journey in gaming?
Yeah, so I think we were trying to approach the education through the game, right? We're not trying to make that separate because we have the feeling that not only people do not read, but they do not like to feel being educated at the moment. But what I think is really interesting is there is a concept of digital identity that's very known and spread among gamers. And there is, of course, their real identity, but they may have on social media, but they would also have a digital identity for social media, but also for various different games where they would achieve a certain status or credibility or skill level. And that is something very meaningful and very important in the gaming community. And they would oftentimes, the best gamers, they would have their identity and recognition inside the game, but also on social media where they would communicate with their other community or fans or followers. And what I think is a very strong concept of people having ownership and control over this identity. So if we speak about education and if we speak about the storytelling and which angle to take, that would be something easiest to grasp. It's perhaps being in control and being owner of the digital identity, because this is something that people invest in probably the most. If we look at our time spent with internet and with social media, how much all of us invest every day into building our digital identities. This is something that comes probably first as being able to control it, being able to have full ownership. So in for the gamer itself, that would of course mean that once they have a proof of skill, they have a credibility, they have a following, it's not locked within one game. They're able to prove their skill, their clout, or their credibility in any other game or any other social network, so they don't have to rebuild over again. It's a credibility, it's a skill that belongs to that person, and it should be transferable. So I think that's the number one thing I'm looking to see happen. It's already happening, but on a smaller scale than I would like to see, because there is a couple billion gamers on this planet, so there's still a way to go.
Totally agree with you, Prashanna. And actually, this kind of brings us full circle and I think shows you how much everything is interconnected in the Web3 community. Because maybe Adelina, riffing off of what Prashanna was talking about in terms of digital identity, obviously with the world of women, I think the nature of the product itself or the project speaks a lot to people's digital identity. And have you found that in building and refining that community, have you also faced challenges, in terms of educating people as to the fact that it's on blockchain and that they can own their digital identity?
Yeah, for sure. Even like I was talking about Patio and how you can claim your profile, like we had a lot of people do it, but not everyone yet. So it's like an extra layer, of like bringing people to do an action. I think it's a work in progress, and education is key for sure. I feel like it's something that's more natural to gamers. We had a lot of people join WoW with their first ever NFTs because they were curious, because the mission, the value, the vision really spoke to them, and they really liked what we were doing. So it's like a whole like realizing what it means to have its digital identity, to feel attached also to a PFP, maybe a username, like we have on socials, all of that. And then to also embrace, the culture of like being like, okay, I represent this PFP because it shows like my values, what I believe in, and all of that. I think there's still to do, but the positive side is that usually like you join a community, and this community will drive you in a specific direction. And we're very, very lucky to have like a really benevolent community. So this is also why we have a lot of people who are newcomers to the space, because they are always willing to educate newcomers, take the time to explain to them like, what is it about? Why is it cool to be in this project? Why Web3 is so exciting? So yeah, it is a blessing.
Fantastic, thank you. Now, maybe shifting gears a little bit and looking at the future. Catherine, maybe I can come to you and ask you just to put on your crystal ball hat, if there is such a thing, and give me an idea of where you think the space is heading, actually, and blockchain technology in particular over the next, let's call it 5 or 10 years. Let's think big. What do you foresee coming down the road?
I want to see mainstream adoption, but I think in order to get that, we've spoke about many of the issues that are going to be needing to be addressed along the way. So I think, as we have more advancements in the layer twos, different, more account abstraction, more people onboarding, I think that will facilitate a lot more people into Web3. I think that gaming is the ultimate onboarding example, because people already feel like they own their rights when they don't. I think that we are seeing it now with the ETF being approved, that we're going to start hopefully getting some more regulatory clarity. And hopefully that will give us a regulatory framework that we'll be able to then build towards. And I think that will give a lot more institutional adoption into the space, into the wider space as well, if we have that framework. I think that we're going to have there's going to be a time where DeFi and traditional finance eventually kind of meet and either merge together or one or other will win, because I think the ability for people to access some of these financial projects, financial instruments, needs to be universal. And I feel like that's been taken away from a lot of people. The other big thing, I think, is we will see the integration of blockchain technology into like everything. So I might be able to say, hello, Alexa, send Bitcoin to Robbie to pay this. I feel like there's going to be a stage where everything is connected together and we can take advantage of it. I think to do with that, we obviously need to address some of the issues that people have with like the fact that everything is public, and maybe some more advances in like zero knowledge proofs and things like that as a way to like maintain people's privacy and data. The one that I'm waiting for, like way that's further down, maybe more the 10 years one, is when people are looking at more quantum resilient blockchains. So advancements in quantum computing and how we're going to deal with that.
Fantastic. I actually just met a guy in Leap in Saudi Arabia who insisted to me that he has quantum resistant algorithms. So I guess it remains to be seen, but so maybe Bojena, I'll come to you with the same question. You know, when you put on your crystal ball hat, as I'm now seem to be calling it, what emerging trends in the space really interest you? Where do you think we're headed? I guess particularly with respect to gaming as well, because obviously gaming is, you know, the biggest part of all our lives in terms of entertainment now.
So I would probably pick something that I'm personally very excited about, and that is a proof of human. We are seeing so many botnets that are influencing people's opinions and moods on social media. We're seeing more and more deepfakes, AI influencers, and that is a force that's just unstoppable, that's inevitable. It's going to be around us, and I think we want to be able to know who is human. So when we will be surrounded by AI that is going to have a voice and is going to be influential as well as creator, we need to know, and we should be able to differentiate. I know there are projects that are already looking to do that. It would be magnificent to have a solution that's decentralized, so the proof of human is not directed by few companies that are gatekeepers or states. It, like, having a decentralized solution for that would be absolutely amazing.
That would be amazing. I completely agree with you on the proof of human, to be honest, because I think that's really important. I think, you know, one of the ways that we can think about solving that is obviously through KYC, which is going to be a necessary part of, you know, transacting value more widely in Web3. Maybe Amanda, I'll come to you and ask you the same question. You know, when you're thinking about emerging trends and things that excite you about what's going on in the space, you know, what's captured your attention?
Yeah, and I actually, it's interesting because I was going to say something similar around proof of human, but not necessarily proof of human to each other, but proof of human to the internet. I think that the internet is going to be organized quite differently, and there's going to be a lot of AIs interacting within that internet. And so being able to actually prove that you're a human being to the internet and to games so that it can be organized in a way that makes sense to a human being is going to be important. But what I always talk about is that we think that these digital and these physical realities are separate. But that's right now. I don't think any of us, I remember watching, you know, this movie called Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion, and they were on a video call, and I was like, that's the future. And now FaceTime is nothing. I don't think we know what's actually coming. And we think that we're going to be wearing these heavy, you know, headsets, and we're going to be in these realities that, again, are separate. But what I see coming is us being able to look across the table and change the person, you know, in front of us, their outfit and their face, and then being able to actually do the same thing with ourselves within the mirror, and do the same thing with ourselves within our own homes. And so I think that identity is going to be a major Very, very important thing to focus on for this future, because I really want my child to know, you know, where he begins and the worlds that he's creating end, and what he has control over and what he doesn't. And same thing for my daughter, who was actually born on International Women's Day. I want her to know that, you know, who she is at her core, and their reality and their identity is going to be extremely different. So I think if we don't change the way we measure success, if we keep measuring success as time and attention, we're going to be in a really, it's going to be a very big problem, because our kids are going to be lost in these digital realities, and they're never going to again have ownership of that identity. And so it's twofold. It's one, giving them ownership. This might be a mini TED talk. I'm sorry, Robin, I'm just very passionate about this, but, you know, giving them ownership of that identity within these realities, one, but two, teaching them about discernment and having the capacity that they need in order to have this nuanced understanding of what works and doesn't work for them within these realities. And that is education. And it's also, again, it's not just about time and attention, it's quality of time. And so that's something that I hope that we change in the future, is how do we measure that time?
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And Adelina, maybe I'll come to you last on this same topic. You know, when you're thinking about what's what really sort of catches your attention and what new trends are emerging, what do you think about in Web3?
What I'm excited about for the 5-10 years as well.
Absolutely.
I would say that I hope we have more, I'm thinking more like a completely different topic, social justice. So we gave a lot to organizations these past years, and I think it's really great to be able to follow where your money is going and how it is used. And we, you know, whenever we have to check for an organization, it's like a whole vetting process, because you're not sure that they will put their mouth where their money is. So it's like an entire process. And I hope that in 10 years from now, it will be common to be using blockchain technologies to prove that you are actually legit, and that you are doing what you say that you're doing. And in a dream world, I would love to have this for governments as well, to be sure that, like, you're actually voting for people who are doing what they say that they're doing and who are investing the money where it should, and that it's not some really, like, obscure thing and very complicated to seize, and that it brings more transparency, more accountability, and more involvement also from, like, all the citizens and everything. So yeah, I'm very, like, interested about all of this. This is why also I was telling you, like, I would love a world where you know what you consume, where it's from, like, you have the knowledge. Like, I think knowledge is really important, and I'm excited about that part.
Yeah, no, that's really great, and I think hopefully if our team is listening, I think we need another Spaces about social impact and social justice, because I have a feeling if I open this can of worms, we're going to be here all morning. So I know we're coming up on the hour, and everybody's time is extremely valuable. So maybe I'll finish just with one quick question for everybody, because you know, obviously I see a lot of familiar faces here on the Spaces. So thank you so much, people from our Mochaverse community and World of Women communities, etc. But I also wanted to address maybe some people who've joined who may not be you know, native in the Web3 community yet, but interested. And so for people who are other kind of professionals or students who are just interested in the blockchain space generally, you know, what advice would you give to them if they're thinking about joining the space? So maybe, Pushin, I'll start with you quickly.
I think nothing beats your own experience. So I would just encourage you to be a heavy user of Web3 products, to really dive deep into some of the gamings that attract you, that call you, pick some NFTs you like, join the communities, feel the Discord vibes. This all will guide you. I don't think there is a good way. There is no better way than just to really go down the rabbit hole.
Amanda, any advice for people interested in the space?
Yeah, I would find a community associated with an NFT that you're passionate about, and I would join the Discord, and I would ask a lot of questions to people that will really take the time to support you, because you're a part of that community.
Fantastic. And speaking of communities, Adelina, coming back to you then.
Do what you love and just look for your tribe. Your vibe attracts your tribe, or I don't know if it was the other way around, but yeah, like same. Like if you're into gaming, check out the gaming communities. If you're into, I don't know, art, there's plenty of things to do. Just, yeah, do research and you will find something for you, but do what you love. And even if like you want to work in Web3, but you're more like a marketer, a communicator, a tech person, like it's the same concept. Like if you do what you love, you will find something that speaks to you and where you will be able to grow and shine.
That's wonderful. Thank you. And finally, Catherine, any advice for students or interested fans out there, how they can learn more and get involved in the space?
I think the only thing to add to what everyone said about playing around and things like that is most projects will have their own testnet, even if they're live or in beta phase. So you don't even need to be spending money to be trying out some of these protocols and interacting with these applications. You can literally do it with test tokens as well. So it doesn't need to be a cost even associated with it to try out these technologies. And I would encourage everyone to just try and play around as much as they can.
That's absolutely great advice. You know, I would completely agree with that. So we have lots of people out there just trying stuff, getting on the Discords, getting involved in the communities, and finding your tribe through your vibe. I think that's fantastic advice. Well, thank you everybody for joining us on our Animoca Brands monthly spaces. Thank you also to the World of Women for co-hosting with us today. And don't forget, obviously, we have a special campaign for International Women's Day. For those of you who joined late, the code is Women in Web3. So don't forget to collect your points. And I'd really like to thank our guests, Bojena, Amanda, Adelina, and Catherine. Thank you for joining us today. And everybody, have a fantastic day and keep building.